This is April 28, 1989, and I'm going to be using this tape to interview Professor S. Chern, who's visiting the Institute. I'm going to be interviewing him in Marquand House. This is Betsy Devine speaking. Well, I did make up, of course, a list of questions to ask
you.
But
yes, go ahead.
All right.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. In André Weil, in his introduction to your selected papers, he talks about how hard it was for you to get from China to the Institute the first time that you came.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to hear more about that from your side of the story.
Yeah.
How it was arranged.
That's 43.
Your first visit. That's
43. Yeah. I was in correspondence with Veblen. He used to transmit some of my papers and some papers of my students to American journals for publication.
Yes.
I got an invitation from the Institute to come as a member in 1943. I think the letter of invitation must have come in 42. So I was in interior China, in southwest China.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the times of the war.
Yes.
Yeah. During the war, China was completely isolated. Japanese were everywhere, on the rims of China. So I had to go by India, over the hump.
Yeah,
over the hump to India, and Africa, and to South, all the way, Calcutta, Karachi, Bombay, Karachi, and then, Khartoum, south of Egypt. And over Africa, because the plane had to avoid German army under General Rommel. Rommel was still very active in North Africa, so the plane had to go south. Mm-hmm. And from Africa, I was in Accra, which is now Ghana, West Africa, and then to the plane made a stop in Ascension Islands in mid South Atlantic, to Brazil, to Recife, and then north to Miami. So it took altogether about a week. Mm-hmm. It was American air transport, you see, because the United States was already sending arms to China.
Yes.
And the planes usually came back almost empty. It was completely empty. So I didn't have to pay, but what I need is some arrangement by the government to get a priority.
Yes.
A priority to be on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And these are transports, no seats, something which you pull down to sit. Something folding up the seats. You can pull it down. Actually, at the first leg, from Calcutta to Karachi, two of us, a friend of mine who is a physicist, and myself, in that plane. And then we made all these stops. At each stop, we put up at the air base, and we had to look. They had a list for people who could go with the next flight. That's how I came.
It sounds very grueling.
Yes, it was a little tiresome, but I was young, so there's no problems standing for that.
Was it Veblen that arranged for all this?
Was Veblen. My correspondence was with Veblen. Whom I correspond to. I don't know whether you saw a short article of mine published in this publication of the American Mathematical Society, A Century of Mathematics in America. Last year was the centennial of the American Mathematical Society.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a mathematician?
No, I'm not. My background is engineering.
Oh, engineering, yes.
A little bit of math.
Yes, yeah. And now you're interested in history.
Yes,
yes. So, the American Mathematical Society decided to have a publication on history. There are two volumes.
Right.
I wrote an article in the first volume.
Oh.
It's a short article, only a couple of pages, about American differential geometry and my relation with some of the American mathematicians, particularly with Veblen.
Yeah. All right, wonderful. I'll go and look it up. Thank you very much.
It's easy that you'll find that article. And I mentioned, say, my first contact with Veblen was when I was in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote to Elie Cardin, with whom I was working as a postdoctor. He said, I got my degree in Germany, in Hamburg, Germany.
Yes,
and with Blaschke. And I spent the postdoctor one year in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And Veblen was asking some mathematical questions.
Now, so about what year would that have been?
That was 36, 37.
I see. So you met Veblen in Paris in the summer of...
No, only by correspondence. His correspondent was Elie Cardin.
Oh, I see.
Not even with me. So he asked Elie Cardin some questions, some mathematical questions.
Mm-hmm.
So Elie Cardin showed his letter to me,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to do something on this question. And this result of mine was transmitted to Veblen, which he recommended to the NS Mathematics,
mm-hmm.
and was later published.
I see.
That was my first contact with Veblen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then later on, I went back to China. China was already at war with Japan, so it was a lot of difficulties at that time. But we kept up our correspondence. Yeah. Then in 1942, he invited me to come to Princeton.
I see.
Yeah.
Did you find him? Did you work with him at all when you were here?
Was Not he mathematically.
No.
He was a very nice man.
Did you cut wood with him?
Did
you go to the forest with him and cut down
trees?
Oh,
yes. And he said, show me your hand. You see, he decided
mm-hmm.
I was not really a worker. So he said, your hands. Say. But I mean, at that time, cutting wood was one of the activities I didn't do because of Veblen. And those who took part more regularly were Ziegler, Carl Ludwig Ziegler,
mm-hmm.
and Wolfgang Pauli.
I
joined them, say, from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do too much work on them. I was not a good cutter, with exercise. But I'd say just for fun. See. The institute was very small, very few people. So we all knew each other very well. The institute was very quiet at that time.
Did Veblen spend a lot of time at the...
At Aberdeen.
Yes.
Yeah, he was in charge of that activity. So he had a nice office, as you know, and he allowed me to use his office. I have my, at that time, you see, this building, the site, did not exist yet. It was only the main food hall.
I see.
So I had an office on the third floor,
mm-hmm.
and Veblen has his office on the first floor.
Yes, it's
next
a beautiful
line
office.
Stands.
Yes,
next
that's
line
right.
Stands. I think I used to take a nap in his office.
Yeah. I see.
It was not used. Now he allowed me to use this. He has a library which
mm-hmm.
I could make use of. And I saw him when he came back. From time to time he came back to Princeton and probably did some work. And then I saw him.
You know, one thing that I'm curious about that you might be able to tell me the answer to, I know that Veblen was very involved in organizing mathematics, that
is,
in getting money for it,
getting
national research fellowships.
Yes, yeah.
And I know that Hermann Weyl was active at the Institute in a different way. That is to say, he organized seminars and a journal club and worked with the younger mathematicians.
Yes, yes.
Did Veblen work with people? Was Veblen involved in that kind of organizing? Was Veblen involved in the mathematical activity of the Institute?
Oh, yes. I think not, of course. I was here from 43 to the end of 45.
Mm-hmm.
He was mostly away. He was involved in war work.
Yes.
Then the second time I came from China was 49. I spent half a year here, the spring semester here. And I give lectures in his seminar. He had a seminar. His seminar, and I give most of the lectures.
I see.
Yes. Yeah. So he always came. Always came. Yeah.
Okay.
But he was probably mathematically not so active. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he followed.
Yeah. Where did you live when you were at the Institute in 43, 45? Where was there for people to live?
I had a room on Wiggins Street.
Wiggins
Street, do you know Wiggins
Street? It's way on the other side of Nassau Street, is that right?
That's right. And Wiggins Street is prior to to Nassau Street.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think there's a Jefferson.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I had a room at the intersection of these two streets. So just a room.
Yeah. I see. Yes. So you walked to the Institute from
there? I walked to the Institute. I usually pass the Einstein House, which you are going to occupy at Mercer. Occasionally, I also took the bus.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
there was a bus. I think that still exists now.
The bus
between Food Hall and Fine Hall.
Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yes, sometimes I took the bus, but sometimes I walked.
Right?
Yeah.
Was it night? I'd just like to find out more about the Institute during those years of the war.
Yes.
Did you ever work with James Alexander? I mean, I know he was interested in topology.
Oh, yes. I knew quite well, yeah. I talked to him, I think that was the time he wrote his paper on gradients.
Uh-huh.
On gradients. He also always tried to get a simple definition of what is called homology. I don't know whether, you get accustomed to these names. Yeah. He tried to develop a simple homology theory for very general spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And that he called gradients.
Mm-hmm.
And later on was developed it was called the Alexander cohomology theory. I think he was at that time interested in topological invariants of very general spaces.
Yeah.
I knew him quite well.
Did you go mountain climbing with him?
No, not mountain, but I went to his house, mm-hmm. For several of the parties. And they used to give parties. The ones who gave parties were Alexander von Neumann.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to many times to their houses.
Gabby Burrell told me
that
at Alexander's house they once had a beach party where they brought in sand and they put a truckload of sand in their living room.
Not as wide as the parties I went.
I see. I think those must have been days of better parties than they have right now. What was your impression of von Neumann? I guess he wasn't exactly in the same kind of things that you
I knew him very well. Yeah, he was very nice to me. Usually I saw him at parties at Bachmann's apartment.
At Valentine Bachmann?
Yeah. Mrs. Bachmann.
Yes, Sonia Bachmann.
Yes. Sonia Bachmann gave a lot of parties, which I usually went. And I saw von Neumann a number of times there. I was also at von Neumann's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was very kind to me. He was, at that time, he spent more time in Princeton than Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw him more frequently. Yeah.
I see. Did you ever talk about mathematics with von Neumann, or was it just
social. The only thing is later on, after I went back to China, there was some Chinese mathematician writing a paper more in his area.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to von Neumann, and the paper was published in Annals.
Yeah,
he recommended it to the Annals.
It must be difficult if you're living in China and the main publications are not, I mean, if you want to publish something in the Annals and you have to, it would be much easier if you could just send it to the Annals
the
yourself.
The Annals always has a very high standard.
Yes.
And there are very few people who write papers who are acceptable by the Annals. So, but it's appreciated. Some papers, published in Annals is usually valued much higher than other papers,
mm-hmm.
which is natural.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you work, was there anyone you collaborated with at the Institute in 43 to 45 that you worked with mathematically?
Actually, see, my closest mathematical contact was with Chevalier at Feinhold.
I see.
You see, he was writing his book on Lie groups at that time, mm-hmm. and he had a group of people, including Warren Ambrose, for instance, who was a lecturer at Feinhold mm-hmm. at the university. And we were usually together.
I see.
Now, I did have some mathematical contact with Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, we talked, but not exactly, say, a kind of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I talked to Hemingway a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my first paper on the Gauss-Bonnet formula,
mm-hmm.
which is probably one of my best works, Hemingway was among the first who read the paper. I wrote up the manuscript, and he was the first one to read it.
Okay.
And one day, he said that, you know, I have another paper which was already published in MS.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, do you know, say, who was the referee of your paper?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was he.
I see.
Yeah, he read my paper, and he wrote a lengthy report mm-hmm. on the paper, and he had a high recommendation paper, but he had some suggestions for improvement, or say anyway, his way of looking at the problem, which I later incorporated in the paper, and I revised the paper, mm-hmm. say, afterwards it was published. And Hemingway himself told me that he was the referee.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, he knew my name before I came here. He read my paper.
That's a wonderful feeling when you're a young person. Like,
oh, yes.
To have someone
actually
heard someone.
And later on, I used to visit Zurich
mm-hmm.
because Heinz Hopf was there, who's very close to my mathematical interest. And Hemingway, Mrs. Weiss lives in Zurich.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second Mrs. Bach.
I see.
Yeah. I think she still lives there. When I went to Zurich in the past years, occasionally I saw her.
I see.
Yes. I had correspondence with her, and then I gave seminar in Zurich,
mm-hmm.
which Hemingway always attended.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see. One of the things that you were working on at that time was sphere bundles.
Yes.
And I was wondering how you'd say your work relates to, say, the work on bundles by Hassler-Whitney.
I think he did it from the topological aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it from the geometric aspect. So they complement their work. I had very close relation with Hassler, say, as a result of this. You see, I come from geometry, I had my training in geometry, and the main issue which led me to bundles is what I just mentioned about the Gauss-Bonnet formula.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about the Gauss-Bonnet formula already when I was in China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then, say, when I came here in 1943, I saw Anderwey. Anderwey at that time, say, taught at Lehigh University.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to Princeton frequently. He just published his paper with Ellendorfer on the Gauss-Bonnet formula.
I see.
Well, I mean, yesterday we took walks, and we took walks and we discussed about this formula, but I had some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I had some ideas, and very soon I was able to do something which turned out to be significant. And that, from the Gauss-Bonnet formula, when you try to extend it to more general situations, you came naturally to the work of Hassler-Whitney on sphere bundles.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into sphere bundles, and I was friendly with Hassler. I visited him at Harvard. Yeah.
I see.
Yes, many times. So we came from different angles to the same subject. Now say, this is now important in physics, for instance, the notion of gauge field theory. Now the gauge field has as a mathematical basis these bundles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. and say the mathematicians come across, the Hustlers came to this from topology, mm-hmm. and then I came from geometry. Now the geometry has the consequence that you can look at the local geometry. Mm-hmm. You know? Topology is global.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? It's a, so it's more adapted to applications. See, in applications, in physics, you like to look at the local situation. You want to have, you need numbers. You look at certain quantities,
mm-hmm.
and the geometry say leads that more naturally to applications.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't necessarily understand everything
yes,
you're saying, but we'll put it in the transcript, and someone
of
who can
physics
understand.
What kind of does your husband do?
Well, one of the things he's interested in is gauge theory.
So where were you before you came to Princeton?
Well, many years ago we met. We were both graduate students here. Then
in Princeton.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
But just before we were here, he was on sabbatical at Harvard, and before that, there's an institute for theoretical physics that was put in Santa Barbara, California.
Oh yes.
So we were there for 7 years, I think.
Oh, at Santa Barbara. Oh
yes.
Yes.
That's
oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. Well, one of the questions I have here is about André Weil. I was just wondering how you had gotten to be friends and work together and things like that when he was at Lehigh and you were here.
You read his article.
Yes, I did.
Yes, yeah.
Well, now I know
so
what he said. Now
he knew my paper. He reviewed one of my papers before we ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, after I came here, he was at Lehigh, and later he was in Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm.
He taught, he was in Strasbourg, and so we saw each other very frequently.
Right.
Yeah. We discussed all kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
We became close friends.
I think he's wonderful. I was just going to say that.
Yes, yeah.
It's almost his birthday. Did you know that?
Yes, I know. Do you know the exact day?
Yes, it's May 6th.
May 6th. Oh, yes. Yeah, yes.
So, anyway, I'm interested to ask, to hear from you, if you can express, people have different mathematical personalities. For example, it was said of the contrast between von Neumann and Einstein, someone once said.
Yes.
Was that if you... that Einstein was very, very slow and thorough. With von Neumann, if you asked him a question,
he could
tell you in 15 seconds,
yes.
but if he couldn't tell you in 15 seconds, he would never think about it again.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't interested in the longer
term
thing. I was just wondering if you might have anything to say about, say, some of the mathematical personalities of some of the people we've been talking about, like Hermann Weyl or André Weil. Or Claude Chevalier?
No, Claude Chevalier, his style may be closer to von Neumann.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has comments. He was very fast.
Mm-hmm.
He may not be always right.
Mm-hmm.
So Hermann Weyl has had broad views.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at mathematics as a whole, and when he saw some mathematical concept developed, he immediately had some idea of his position in the whole of mathematics. And usually I think he was right. And André Weil was also, I think I got a lot of benefit in discussing with him all kinds of questions. He understood very quickly and was able to make comments.
Yes.
They're all very impressive people. Yeah.
Yes. All right. And you mentioned, I read that little article, as I mentioned in my note to you, I read that little article that you wrote for the Mathematical Intelligencer, or you were reviewing some letters that passed between Einstein
and Ilikata.
Ilikata.
Yes.
Did you
forget what I said.
Now you forget. Oh, well, you didn't say that much. You said that you've known both men.
Yes.
And that you said that the Institute during the war was very quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Einstein was still working on questions that were more closely related to math than to physics. I forget exactly what you said.
Yes, yes, yeah.
But, Was in the 1940s, did you feel that he was really hopeful of getting his unified field theory going, or did you feel he was still just sort of doing it without? Or is that a sensible question?
I think he must have confidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He tried all kinds of approaches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he worked very hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, moving from one approach to another.
Yes.
Yeah, I was not able to work more deeply with him because I was more interested in other aspects.
Right.
Yeah. But Einstein has very high standard. He insists on a physical theory satisfying all these things. For instance, I must think, say, a theory like the Gates theory
mm-hmm.
probably would take him a long time to swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did not like quantum theory, although he was one of the initiators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but he thought it did not satisfy all his requirements for unity or beauty mm-hmm. of the field. But his work at that time was quite close to mine. We didn't discuss his physics. Usually we discuss with him. In fact, when I visited his house, which you will be moving in, he has on his shelf books by Lao Tzu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he liked this kind of Chinese philosophy.
I see.
Yeah. And we discuss about Chinese philosophy, about China. Not much about science.
Were you interested in music also? I know he was.
No, not yeah.
Okay. Well, I wanted to find out when you came back in 1949.
Yes.
I was curious. How had the institute changed, say, between 45 and 49? When you.
I think, as I said, 45 was very quiet.
Yes.
Yeah, not much activity already. Although we had a seminar on mm-hmm. differential geometry, but 49 was in boom. I mean, a lot of people in particular, not as many as there now, but a lot of people and a lot of young people.
Nice.
Yeah, yes. So it has started to recover from the war.
Mm-hmm. Was your family with you at the? I know from reading André Weil's article. I know that they came with you from China this
yes,
time.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And did they come to Princeton also?
Yes, oh yes, oh yes, yeah, yeah. We lived on the project. Mm-hmm. And the project at that time, houses were not built yet, so mm-hmm. they have some temporary housing. Yeah. As a matter of fact. Might be interesting at that time. Our neighbor was Jack Steinberg, who received the Nobel Prize last year.
I see.
He was our next door neighbor. So that was I came here in February of 49.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say December I went to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I received this offer from Chicago.
Okay. And André Weil was already out there.
Yes, that's
right.
Yes.
So, that's where my husband went as an undergraduate, to Chicago. He loved Chicago.
Oh, yes. What years were he there?
He's born in 1951, so he must have been pretty recent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. He was a kid, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't remember
yeah.
that yet.
I think during that period, all the physicists had to go to Chicago because of family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Everybody spent some time in Chicago at that time.
Did you know Fermi out there?
Oh, yes, yes. Now, occasionally, I even sat there and listened to one of his lectures.
Uh-huh. You know, Goldberger, who's the new director here, was Fermi's student.
Sir, that's right, yeah. Also, my former student, Yang, C.N. Yang, he was a film. Formerly, he got his degree with at Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he was very close to Fermi.
I see.
And both Yang and Li were in Chicago, all the young people.
Yes.
Including Marvin. Yeah.
Yes.
All
right. Let's think. Well, what kind of, I know you were just here for a semester in 1949, but and it must have been very hectic, you know, having just left China and having your family.
Yeah, actually, I gave a series of lectures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there was a period. I think probably I gave lecture for about 2 months. Mm-hmm. I was the only speaker of that seminar. It was essentially a Veblen seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these were published in Institute Notes. Yeah. Topics on differential geometry. Yeah.
Not that
which,
I understand it, but
yeah.
I can.
Yes. What is the best word?
Topics in
differential geometry. I give these lectures in 49, and the notes appeared in 51. It took me some time to. Yeah, I went to Chicago and I had to set it down, so I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And these notes were quite popular at that time. You see, 51. So all these concepts, which nowadays become commonplace in gauge field theory and also in mathematics. Yeah, 51.
Let's think. You wrote. I noticed that you wrote a couple of papers with Raoul Bott. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes.
I just noticed because he's been at the Institute quite a bit.
I think
he's coming later this week. Next week he's coming.
Oh, he's
to Princeton.
Coming.
Yes.
I'm going there.
Really? Where?
Yeah,
when are you
going?
I'm going
to Boston tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. He's coming.
May 4th. He's giving a talk at Princeton.
On May 4th.
Yeah.
I may still see him.
I see.
I'll be staying at Harvard May 1st and 2nd.
Okay, well,
yes. Yeah. I saw him when I came in 49.
Mm-hmm.
He was here. Harvard.
He worked a lot with Marston Morse, I know.
That's right. Yes.
I didn't ask you anything about Marston Morse, but was what Morse and Bott were working on, the topology and the large, or whatever?
Yes.
Was that relevant to what you were interested
in?
Oh, yes.
Very relevant, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Marston quite well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I went to. Yeah, usually talk to him. But my mathematical activity, by nature, is closer to Hassler Whitney than to Marston Morse. Although they're closely related.
Did you notice, I was wondering, when you first came here, Frank Adelot was the director of the Institute,
that's right.
In 49 was, and 55, it was Oppenheim.
Yes, that's right.
Did you notice any particular difference between their, I mean, did it make any difference to you as a visiting member?
No, not
member?
To me, yeah. It was both very nice to me, yeah.
Good.
I knew both of them, occasionally, so went to their office, have some chat with them,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. More with Oppenheimer because we were closer in interest. And Oppenheimer used to ask me to give talk in his physics seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when I'm around, I think I talked in his physics seminar a couple of times.
When you came back in 1954, you'd been at Chicago by then for about 4 or 5 years.
Yes, that's right. I came on my sabbatical from Chicago. I think that year I had a Guggenheim. I spent a year, 54, 55. And then the first time I was here for 2.5 years, and then a year, 54, 55, then I think I spent another semester here. Yeah, not counting the occasional visits like
mm-hmm.
this.
Well, I know you spent the semester in 49. Dear, have you spent time here since 1980? I haven't got...
Since 1980, probably not. Yeah.
Okay.
I think
since
Mrs. Moriarty was telling me that I have been staying in this house in 81 and 83. And each time, only for a few days.
Well, it's a beautiful place, but it is kind of far from Berkeley.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, and frankly, at my age, I prefer to stay home.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
it's all very nice, very enjoyable, seeing old friends. But somehow, say, one's mobility is more restricted.
Well, I guess you have to really think about it before you do things.
Yes. For one thing, it's a burden for me to carry my bag. So travel is less present. You don't understand this yet. Yeah.
Well, I hope I get to.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you one of the questions I've been asking other people. I guess the how important would you say the Institute has been to your work? I mean,
Me, it's just crucial. It's because I wouldn't be able to do some of my main contributions without coming here. I was in China, and apparently in my situation, I was prepared in certain area of mathematics, and then I had to come here in order to be able to do this work. It was crucial for my career.
Because of what you learned here?
Because of what I learned here, because the subject, a scientist have to come to a subject at an opportune time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's developed here to a certain stage. And I came in with a certain technique and certain training, which is new to the subject.
Yes.
So this combination allowed me to do my work in this area. So because I came with an entirely different background, and it turned out that this combination is a right thing for the development of these concepts.
Not that I'm going to understand you, but would you like to be more specific for someone who might read about this sometime in what exact kind of concepts and what exact kind of area are you talking about?
This is...
Is it sphere bundles or
manifolds? I think essentially the area could be described as the geometry of fiber bundles, which is the mathematical basis of the gauge field theory in physics.
All right.
So, and that has need a combination of different disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, say, need topology, which is well developed in Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
But it also needs the locus theory, which was based on the work of Elie Cartan, who was not so recognized at that time yet. But I came in with my understanding of Cartan, so they fit very well.
Yes.
And that allowed a certain development. And at the Institute was the main thing which allowed me to do my work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was a very unusual combination.
Well, I'm glad that it was helpful.
Yes.
One other question I was hoping to ask you if we had a bit of time.
Yes.
I noticed that when You know Wilhelm Blaschke. Did you work with him when you were in Hamburg?
Oh yes. I got my degree with him. Yeah.
You know, he has a bad reputation around here because of that funny thing he once wrote.
Yes. Yeah. He lied. So he was very nice.
To hear what you have to say.
It was unfortunate he made this sarcastic comment.
Yes.
I think he probably tried to be funny or to be humorous. Yeah.
Yes.
But it appeared in print, and people never forgive him.
I see.
But he was a great geometer.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great geometer at that time, the leading geometer in Germany, and he has a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I was very much influenced. Not very directly, because at that time he already traveled a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the European system, you don't get that much direction from your professor. The student just went their own way. So, yeah.
Could you tell me a little more about how that works? You arrived from China, then and in Hamburg.
Oh,
right?
I think it's for a while. You see, I arrived in Hamburg in 1934, in
mm-hmm.
September 1934. At that time, say, most people went on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So the people I was recommended to say were not there. And I hardly spoke any German. See,
mm-hmm.
I had 2 years of college in German, in mm-hmm. school, in college,
yeah.
which was quite inadequate.
Yes, it's
yeah,
a poor
but
preparation.
But I got around being a young man, first time out of China. So things are very exciting. And you know, so one can get along in a place even without speaking the language. You can always make yourself understood.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in September, naturally I went to one of these classes for foreigners, Deutsch für Ausländer, German for foreigners. I went to that class and which met every day and a lot of work. So, but then it's not hard to get used to this.
Mm-hmm.
When the semester started, I was able to follow the lectures, although they were all in German.
Mm-hmm.
But mathematics lectures, relatively, the language was relatively simple.
Yes.
Yeah, and a year later, or even before that, I was able to give seminar reports myself.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yes.
Was it? I know that by that time, of course, Hitler had come to power, and for example, the Jews had been denied their professorships, and many people had left.
Yeah.
Was that? Well, of course, if you weren't there before 1933, you wouldn't have noticed the change.
Yeah, I didn't notice change. You see, I was a country boy, I mean, from China.
Yes.
I didn't know much about Western politics, as you say, Western politics. I knew Hitler was there. I did not have a good understanding of his relation with Jews, I mean, what he did. So only later, say, I begin to gradually understand, say, some of the awful things he did. So I just went there, and as a student, actually the Nazi government was friendly to I don't know, it's a funny thing, you see, to students from other foreign countries. They like to have the foreign students. So I didn't know I had
so
no
they
comparison.
Didn't harass you for not being German?
They didn't, no, they didn't harass me. They were quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
They were quite nice. And it's the first time I was exposed to a Western country. So I had no comparison.
Yes,
yeah.
I imagine I can really see.
So I was recommended. I had some room. Later on, I moved to a dormitory. And they did have this racial attitude, but somehow they didn't apply to the other races, not that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my German was inadequate, so I didn't follow that. And until later, I began to realize what their philosophy was.
When would you say that would have happened? Sorry.
Excuse me, that's all right.
When would you say, when did you sort of begin to...
Only after I left Germany.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. For instance, I knew the word Nazi much later. You don't see Nazi, this word, in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the German papers or German periodicals. So only later, when one of my friends came to visit me from London,
mm-hmm.
and then I begin to realize some of the reaction from other countries.
Yes.
So
when you went to Paris to work with Elie Cartin in 36, 37?
Yes.
How is that in contrast to, say, to humble?
Actually, it's only superficial differences to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was in humble, of course, my main purpose was to do mathematics.
Yes.
So I worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Eli Cartan was nice to me. I saw him frequently. At the end, I went to see him once every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and I gave him a report of the work I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I went. I think I was there for about 10 months,
mm-hmm.
and I wrote 3 papers. Yeah, so which means I worked very hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
3 papers
that's
on different topics.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the main difference is the life in a bigger city like Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Hamburg itself was already a big city,
mm-hmm.
but it's naturally, certainly, say, Hamburg and Paris are quite different.
Yes, well, yeah. I
imagine. And life was different, you see. In Hamburg, there were some Chinese students, but
mm-hmm.
it's closely knit, it's a very small group.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris is much more
cosmopolitan.
Yes, cosmopolitan, and more people, all kinds of activity. Mainly, the interest in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, it's not too much different.
I see.
Yeah.
And then, did you get married after you went back to China?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. I see.
I went back in 1937,
mm-hmm.
when war broke out between. I was supposed to become a professor at Tsinghua University in Beijing,
mm-hmm.
in, at that time called Beijing, and I never got there. Yeah, because when I went back to China, so through the United States actually,
mm-hmm.
War already broke out and Beijing was occupied.
Nice.
Then we moved around and finally settled down in Kunming, in southwest China.
Could you spell that for me?
K-U-N-M-I-N-G.
K-U-N-M-I-N-G. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And there I had Xian Yang, for instance, as a student in my class.
I see.
Yeah, he attended several of my courses.
Now, I know that he and T.D. Li have both been very active in promoting science in China.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of Chinese scientists in this country try to do something to help the development of China.
I think it's a fine idea.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. My husband has a graduate student from China. Real China.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
I guess
in Santa Barbara?
Here.
Here.
Well, she was at Harvard when we were at sabbatical there, and now she's come down here to work.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Was she going to get a degree from Harvard?
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
But she told me that her father was a professor, and during the Cultural Revolution, I guess, they all had to go and live on a farm. And
Oh, yes. It's terrible.
Terrible.
Yes.
Well, glad that's over. One thing I'd just like to ask you more, if you have the time, because this is something I've been asking people. I'm very interested in hearing how people, when they're children or teenagers, first become interested in mathematics. If you'd be willing to tell me a little bit about it. You were born in China. Were you? Is it a small town, a big town, a countryside?
It's a small town. I think I had in my case. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
My case, I had good training in high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in high school, I had some very good math teachers.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in my sophomore year in high school,
mm-hmm.
That was when I was maybe 12 or 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We used the book by Hall and Knight.
How do you spell it?
Hall and Knight. H-A-L-L, Hall, H-A-L-L,
H-A-L-L,
Hall,
Hall,
sorry, yeah, Hall, food hall, like a food
hall,
Hall and Night, K-N-I-G-H-T. It's a very popular textbook in England. And this book on algebra, his book, their book on algebra, and then also they had a book on what is called high algebra. Mm-hmm.
So you were studying in English, even though?
English. We studied in English, and also the standard American text at that time was Wentworth Smith. Wentworth and Smith.
Okay.
Yeah, and Wentworth and Smith on geometry. And geometry, and also trigonometry. And so, and we did almost all the exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's very, it's a solid background.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, I think nowadays, see, the schools emphasize the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is more, say, drill.
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of drill is very useful.
Because,
it's a training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there ever some special kind of problem or thing that you worked out in those days when you were, say, 12, 13, 14, that made you feel very excited about mathematics or made, you know, some day that you said to yourself, I'd really like to be a mathematician?
I don't know. I think I had no idea at that time to wish to be a mathematician. I had no idea what a mathematician does.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So just in school, and I did well with mathematics classes, and I didn't do well with experiments.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes my choice more and more limited.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated from college, I didn't know what the life of a mathematician could be.
Mm-hmm.
So. It could end up just as a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I think I didn't think about that. I never had the idea that the life of mathematicians could be this good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So when you finished college, you were going to go to graduate school to Hamburg, but you weren't sure, not because you were going to be a mathematician, just because?
It's gradually, of course. After I graduated from college, I began to realize that there's something as doing mathematical research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I try to develop something new in mm-hmm. mathematics, and even have papers published.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very gradual.
Did you go to Hamburg that very same year that you graduated from college, or did you work?
No, no. It was very difficult to come out to study in West Country because it's very expensive.
Yes.
And my family couldn't afford to support me to study in Western. So I had to get a fellowship.
I see.
And so I went to Tsinghua University as a graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
With the possibility that I could get a fellowship
mm-hmm.
after I finished graduate school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did. So I spent 4 years
mm-hmm.
First year as an assistant of the department, and the next 3 years as a postgraduate student.
Right.
And then I got a fellowship. In fact, my fellowship, was a fellowship for the United States. Normally, people came to the United States. So I requested to be allowed to go to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And this was approved.
What was the name of the fellowship, or do you remember?
It's a Boxer, you see, Boxer Indemnity. You see, China lost the war in 1901. This
mm-hmm.
At the Boxer
Rebellion.
Boxer Rebellion.
Yes.
And China had to pay all the indemnities to the Western powers.
Uh-huh.
And the United States was the first one under Teddy Roosevelt
mm-hmm.
to decide that really, this In them there was enough, and so used the money to send Chinese students to study in the United States.
I see.
Yeah. That was the basis of the Tsinghua University, which is now in Beijing.
I see.
So many Chinese students came on that kind of fellowship.
I see.
The Boxer indemnity fund returned by the United States to China.
Boxer is just B-O-X-E-R?
B-O-X-E-R.
That's just fascinating. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with me.
Now, I wonder whether you can give me a favor. Are you going back to Institute?
Would you like a ride?
I would like a ride.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going there. Say, I'm going to have lunch with Andre.
Oh,
so
how nice.
I have some stuff.
Sure.
I'll be down in a minute.
Great, I have to pack this up anyway.
Okay.